I hope you can hear me.
Yes, Chair. Good afternoon.
Loud and clear.
Okay, welcome. Welcome, honorable members. Welcome, honorable minister, and all in the house. You are welcome to this meeting of portfolio committee. Let's first check whether we've got a quorum. Anele,
is it Anele? Good afternoon. Yeah, it's me, Chairperson. Okay. Good afternoon to members. Good afternoon to our guests. Chairperson, at the moment we have Honorable Bozoli, Honorable Notata, Honorable Letsie, Honorable Mananiso in the house. The apology that I received is from Honorable Ngcobo, as well as the minister requesting to be released early. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we do form a quorum. We're able to proceed with the meeting. Welcome, Honorable Minister and your team.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, we've received your apology that you would like to be released because there is a presentation that you have to do later on at 2. So we've looked at that. We've agreed that as soon as you are done, you can be excused, Honorable Minister. Okay, let's start with a briefing. I think we have been requested by Parliament to schedule these meetings to look at the revised budget and the impact that the budget as presented by Minister Tito Mboweni is having in the departments, both the Department of Higher Education and Training as well as the Department of Science and Innovation. So today we're looking at the impact of that revised budget on the Department of Higher Education and Training. So without wasting any more time, let me hand over to the Honorable Minister. To give help. Okay.
Good afternoon to everybody. Chair, Honorable Notata here. Chair, can I just please, before we start the meeting, after your remarks, can I just please request, Chair, that we focus mainly on trying to get the answers of whatever presentations we're going to get today and the questions we're going to pose in the same meeting, Chair, and try and limit the time that we're going to give to the department and the different entities to present to us, because we go through these documents and we read them, and we find ourselves having to wait for a couple of weeks to get answers from a meeting that we could have dealt with. So I think let's try and be more strict in terms of time to give more chances to get the answers to the questions that we're going to pose. It's just a request that I'm putting forward to you, Chair, without interrupting anything that will be presented. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Notata. I think this is something that we've always been trying to do. We've been trying to allocate 1.5 hour, the 3 hours for whatever presentation, and then 1.5 hour for engagement. So I think today we'll get two presentations, I think, in the main. From the department as well as from NSFAS. So we will just follow that established Minister. I'm not sure whether it looks like somebody's fiddling with the screen. because on mine there's just, yeah. Okay, I think the screen is fine now. Honorable Minister.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Mapulane, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and senior management of my department, as well as the leadership of NSFAS. Chair, I'm not going to be long at all. In fact, my remarks are limited to the fact that we do appreciate that we have this platform to explain how we have reprioritized our budget. But what I have asked the department in the main to do for me going forward, which may not be done today, is that in order not to reduce the budget exercise into a numbers issue, a numbers game, I've asked the department that it also analyzes for me what are the implications of this budget cut for post-school education and training generally, and what is the impact of this on the strat plan and the APP, which I'm sure it's something that all of us, including Parliament, this Portfolio Committee in particular, would be interested in. Unfortunately, the turnaround time is too short between this budget cuts, the presentation of the reprioritized budget by the Minister of Finance, and presentation to the Portfolio Committee. Ideally, I would have liked that we come before the Portfolio Committee with that kind of introductory framework to say, this is actually the impact of this budget cuts and reprioritization on our mandate, in much more specific terms. Otherwise, I'm one of those who just doesn't like these numbers, you know, going to reduce it by so much. Fine, but it's very important that we are also able to engage on that score, and also for entities to be guided by ourselves as a department to say, okay, given these cards, what impact is this having? That's the first point, Chair, I want to make as a contextual point. But we are not able to do that today. But now, the other contextual issue that the Portfolio Committee may want to think about and possibly later also engage on. Immediately after this exercise, we have to debate, present and debate the budget vote. And immediately thereafter, we'll have to start with the process of the zero-based budget. That in itself shifts things, because the zero-based budgeting also needs to be guided by the fact that zero-based budgeting does not give more money, but it must also be guided. What are our priorities? Where can we change and adapt without losing the core objectives that we want to achieve for this current financial year? Inevitably, we can't avoid it. It's been a disruptive year in many instances. But on our side, we'd really still like that going forward, we also are able to engage on that. That's all I want to say. And thanks for your understanding, Chair, that at one, I request to be excused as I have some crucial presentations to make this afternoon at two to the National Coronavirus Command Council. So I need about an hour to prepare for that or to finalize my preparations. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll hand over to senior management in the department to then make the presentations and for NSFAS later. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Minister. Can we hand over to the DG?
Thank you very much, Chair. In respect to the purposes of this meeting today, of us presenting
on the special adjustment budgets at the portfolio committee. This is the matter, Chair, that got imposed to the department to contend with in respect to the fact that the department was actually required by the National Treasury upon, of course, decisions taken by the Cabinet of the Republic of South Africa, that all government departments should cut their budgets by 20%. And the only departments that are spared off that cut are departments that are characterized as frontline departments, which is the Department of Health, Defense, SAPS, and Social Development. We would have loved to be categorized as a frontline department, ourselves as a department, but it didn't happen that way. Now, in all then what got imposed on us, we had to work out the processes of engagement with the National Treasurer, of which I'll ask the CFO to take us through, because the first slide is quite important to set the scene in respect to what has actually transpired out of the engagements after we've looked at the entire PSET system and weighed options and identified the areas where a negative impact could actually be impacted on to a point of destabilizing the system. Let me head over to the CFO to quickly take us through. How many minutes, Chair, are you giving us for this presentation?
Well, you have got 30 minutes. I think we can give you 35 and then give NSFAS 35.
Wonderful.
Let's say it's about 9:15 now. So you will calculate the 35 from 12:15.
That's fine. That's fine, Chair. Thank you very much. CFO?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Minister and Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm trying to share the presentation on the screen just to make it slightly easier to follow. I'm not sure if we're going to be successful with that.
Anele, is the CFO having the right to share?
Yeah. Can you assist, Anele?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Now, Chair, it doesn't seem as if you want to go from my side. I wonder if Anele can put up the presentation perhaps from his side.
Somebody is sitting in a noisy area. Please just mute your mic. Yeah? Anele, are you able to share?
Is everyone affected by this load shedding, or is just me, comrades?
Well, it depends on where you stay, because every area gets affected at different times. So I guess for some of us, it hasn't yet come. Yesterday, it was around 2, I think, where I stay. But yeah, it's countrywide, so everybody should be affected. Honorable Gates, are you not having
Loud and clear, Chair. No, I'm captured. It's clear. I'm in the dark, yeah. So I'm not going to switch on the video. I thought I should communicate that.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair. Can you see the presentation?
The files, not yet the presentation. Just double click on the new.
Double click the panel so that we can open the document.
Okay, sure. You still can't see it.
No,
it's not opening. It's not opened yet.
Only showing the files on our side. The Explorer files, not yet the presentation.
Can you see it yourself, Anel?
It's the new Anel.
Yes, sir.
Can you see it on your side?
Yes, new. Sir. I can. Let me try again, sir. You still don't see it, sir?
No, not coming through on it, sorry.
Anel, it's Audrey from ICT. When you share, you go to when you move from one thing to another, you must unshare and then share. Click on the presentation and then share your screen.
Oh, okay. Are you able to see it now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The presentation is on the screen, CFO. You can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We go to slide number two. As indicated by the DG already, and I think the most important would be bullet 3, 4, and 5 on slide number two is that initially, the department, together with all other departments, were requested to ensure a budget cut of 20% to address the impact of COVID-19 across government. And due to the loss of revenue and increased expenditure in certain sectors within government, now, for the department, that would have been a total amount of 19.5 billion rand, which would have impacted severely on the department, the PZ system as a whole, especially if one look at the fact that we mainly have transfers to our CET colleges, the TVET colleges, and the universities, as well as then specifically the National Student Financial Aid Scheme for student loans and bursaries. And as a result, the department submitted a detailed document to National Treasury where we indicated the actual impact that such a cut would have on the PZ system as a whole. So, in that respect, we had several deliberations with National Treasury, and National Treasury supported the submission by the department, not to deal with the department like with all other departments at a level of 20% cut, but a substantive reduced cut to approximately 8%. And what we then did was, together with Treasury, we agreed that the special adjustment budget cut for the department would amount to 9.857 billion rand. Now, the actual suspension of funds on the side of the department was 6.734 billion. But we then also have a 4.999 billion reallocation of funds for the reprioritization of expenditure towards COVID-19 activities. And it resulted in a net suspension of only 1.734 billion compared to the initial 19.5 billion that we would have had. But fortunately, we are not then forced in that respect. The adjustments budget also have the reduction of the collection of skills levies due to the four-month holiday on the side of the skills levy payments, and that in itself is then an amount of 8.122 billion rand. So on the next slide, Chair, we then show the final adjustment of 9.857 billion rand, and the short table, Anele, this slide with the numbers, I think it's four at the bottom. Just the next slide, please. So on the 9.857 billion rand.
Sorry, Anele, it's slide number four.
Slide number four at the bottom, the number four slide, just the next slide on Nelly, that's it. That's correct. So the total suspension of funds, Chair, is then 6.734 billion. We then have the reallocation of funds for COVID-19 reprioritization of 4.999 billion, which gives a net suspension of 1.734 billion. The reduction in skills levy, the 8.122 billion, that shows then the total decrease in the department's budget together with the direct charges to skills levy at 9.856773. So based on the above, the department's original allocation of 116.857 billion was reduced to 107 billion rand, which is then a final reduction of 8%, including the skills levy. The biggest single reduction, a 42% reduction, is on the estimated skills levy collections based on calculations by National Treasury to reduce from 19.413 billion to 11.291 billion. So on the next slide, we see where the amount of 6.734 billion was suspended. First of all, departmental operations, a total of 316.7 million rand. For NSFAS, in terms of the subsidy, specifically for loans and bursaries, an amount of 2.5 billion. University block grants, 2.5 billion. University infrastructure, 710 million. Civic College operational subsidies, 312.203 million. Civic College new campus operations, 15 million. The infrastructure grant on the side of Civic Colleges, 370 million. And the administrative costs for all the public entities, a total of 10.093 million rand. That gives us the suspension of 6.734 billion rand. So on the next slide, Chair, the reallocation of funds. So what Treasury basically did, although they suspended it on the one side, they gave back on the other side. And specifically, as it is indicated in the adjustments budget by the Minister of Finance for COVID-19 related activities. So for the department, the reallocation of 4.999 million is then, first of all, the 2.5 billion that was cut for NSFAS subsidies is reallocated to support the provision of the student devices. So basically, Chair, the only thing that happens here is that Treasury provides an earmarked allocation for the student devices from the current allocation of loans and bursaries. The second one, university block grants, reallocation of 2117404 to address COVID-19 activities on the side of universities. The university infrastructure grant, the reallocation of 210 million. For TVET colleges, the operational subsidies reallocated 162.2 million and the allocation for new campus operations reallocated as 10 million rand. So in addition to the above, Chair, there's also an amount of 1.510 million rand that's not reflected as a suspension or a reallocation, but only as a shifting of funds within the budget of the department's operations to address COVID-19 matters. If we can go to the next slide, Chair. The next slide shows the net reduction. So after the reallocations, it shows us then what the net cuts on the various sectors are. So first of all, departmental operations, a total cut of 316.7 million rand. The NISFAS subsidy is then basically a zero net effect. The university block grants, a net cut of 382.596 million rand. University infrastructure grant, a net cut of 500 million. The TVET college operational subsidies, 150 million. For new campus operations, 5 million. And for the infrastructure grant, 370 million rand. And then also the administrative costs on the side of the various public entities, 10.093 million rand. So Chair, on the next slide, we have some of the impacts of the adjustments budget on the department as well as the various sectors in the department. And some of the key impacts that we would like to list is first of all then on departmental operations. So although the department's operational budget is severely limited, Chair, the portfolio committee would recall the limitations that we reflected in previous presentations. There has been quite a substantive restriction on operations on the side of the department since April to June 2020. And many of those still in effect. And as a result, the majority of the cut that we experience on the side of operations can be maintained by the department in view of these limitations on some of the operations. We can just mention a few, such as travel accommodation, venue hire, other related services. We even have on the side of our compensation of employees, funded vacancies that will not be filled as originally planned, and some of those funds are then also returned as a result of the suspension. So in the process of looking at the amended 2020-21 APP as well as the strategic plan, some of these will be accommodated in those plans, and more detail will be provided when those plans are eventually tabled in Parliament. On the next slide, Chair, we look at the university sector first as the big sector. There is indeed a substantive impact on the university sector due to the pandemic, and the first priority, as announced by the minister, is to protect lives and to save the academic year, and that applies across the PSET system. So the reallocation of the suspended funds was based on estimates provided by all the institutions on funds certainly required to support key initiatives in the sector to allow them to manage the protection of lives and to save the academic year. The net results has an impact on teaching, learning and assessments. They specifically, each institution submitted a multimodal teaching, learning and assessment plan, and that enabled them and indicate how they will complete the 2020 academic year, taking into account the additional costs for COVID-19. Institutions also reprioritized internally. Some of the reprioritization approved by the minister were based on block grants, based on earmark grants, so that they can develop the required teaching and learning platforms to accommodate new ways of teaching and learning remotely within the current situation. Universities will be stalling some current approved projects due to the reprioritization and due to the cuts. But none of those would immediately severely impact on the 2020 academic year. The total cost applicable to teaching, learning and assessment, including all the reprioritization performed by the institutions, would be close to 3.851 billion rand. Apart from that, there's also implications on campus readiness on the next slide, where all universities develop campus readiness plans to ensure that all the regulations for health and safety are in place when students and staff return to the various campuses. The proposed costs are quite substantial. We talk about close to 1.9 billion rand that's applicable, and universities had to accommodate that within their existing resources through reprioritization. In terms of infrastructure grants, the cut on the infrastructure and efficiency grants will certainly result in the postponement of certain projects. There is a general slowdown of infrastructure programs as well as student housing infrastructure, and it may have limited carry-through effect to the future. Apart from the slowdown, some of the projects will have to be extended to ensure that we can accommodate it within the final allocation for infrastructure. On the next slide, Chair, we start with the TVET sector. On the side of the TVET sector in terms of teaching and learning, first of all, the normal operational subsidy cuts in terms of the impact of the 2020 student enrollment means that approximately 6,200 lower headcount enrollments may be experienced at TVET college level, but due to the extensive impact of the lockdown, the students would not have been able to register anyway during this period, and it makes the impact on the TVET system much more minimal. The main impact of the cut will probably be felt in the 2021 new student intake, especially for centres of specialisation, as some of the funding was due in January 2021 and that had to be reprioritised for related expenditure linked to COVID-19. In terms of new campus operations, the net cut is relatively limited, and because many of the projects are still ongoing, it will not have a severe or negative impact on any of the operations. On the next slide, Chair, lastly for the TVET sector, the infrastructure grant, there is sufficient infrastructure funding currently at college level to continue with all existing projects, and the estimates are that the cut will not negatively affect the system immediately. Although it might be a loss for the system, but current transfers already provide for everything that colleges are busy with, and we do believe that there will not be a negative impact. In terms of the CET sector, community education and training, no cuts were effected, and there is no adjustments necessary in terms of the community education and training. In terms of the funding requirements, however, Chair, and I trust that where required, the branches will come in later. But in terms of operation, certainly effects on the sectors, especially also on the CET sector. With regard to the public entities, Chair, firstly, in general, the operational cost cuts that were effected on public entities are mainly linked to the information declared by entities themselves for the funding of vacancies that could not yet be filled. Treasury also tries their best to ensure that we do not unnecessarily limit the operational subsidies of public entities and to focus on those areas where there would be a once-off reduction, such as for unfilled vacancies, and where we do not expect those vacancies to be filled very soon. So the cuts on the entities will therefore not have a substantial impact on the operations. Other operational factors could have a negative impact on entities, however, and we will go into the various entities from the next slide, but things like the generation of own revenue and aspects such as some of the fees that are charged are then severely impacted as a result of general operation limitations. So on the next slide, Chair, we'll start with SACWA as the first entity. SACWA's reduction was 1.218 million rand. And SACWA is one of the big examples where their own revenue generation is severely impacted. Many of their income generating services, including the evaluation of foreign qualifications, even locally the verification of qualifications, as well as the work that they perform for professional bodies, have been severely impacted. And that in itself is about 56% of their total projected annual income, and a large portion of that may be lost at this point in time. They do have difficulties to balance their budget, and the reduction just escalates these challenges. So there is an exercise currently ongoing from the side of the relevant line function branch with SACWA and support from my officer's side so that we can see if we can assist SACWA to manage their financial challenges and to put them in a proper operational position. They are able to or unable to implement all the plans for automation, and in the strategic plan and APP, SACWA indicated that there will not be severe adjustments. They may need to move some of the annual APP targets to the following performance cycle, but they do believe that eventually they will be in a position within the strategic plan to perform everything that they initially planned. For COVID-19, SACWA internally reprioritized 1.5 million rand to address COVID-19 related activities. On the next slide, Chair, the Council for Higher Education, their reduction was 1.424 million rand. CHE confirmed that they reconfigured their ways of working, and greater productivity, reach, and cost effectiveness is possible through their remote working modalities. They invested heavily in ICT architecture, and therefore it's essential that through budgetary prioritization that they can maintain that impetus. The further reprioritization of the budget was to equip all staff with computers and data services, including airtime, so that people can be equipped to effectively work remotely. COVID-19 protocols are adhered to by CHE, and costs are offset against savings realized from, for example, visits that could not be taking place, no travel and accommodation costs as initially budgeted for. Savings from meeting costs of governance committees are redirected to advised research as well as at other advised functions within the CHG. CHG further indicated a reprioritization of the budget that's underway so that they can optimize staffing and that they initiate new research projects related to assessments, teaching and learning, quality assurance, as well as teaching and learning modes. Capacity is also increased in underprovided areas through this reprioritization. Two specific areas mentioned by CHE, the national standards and reviews area in the CHE, as well as institutional audits. There's also a review underway to balance core and non-core functions so that they can achieve an appropriate ratio, certainly with a bias then towards the core functions that they must deliver and less on administrative or non-core functions. Program deliverables, outcomes and targets are reassessed and revised in the light of the COVID-19 crisis to tweak and refine the strat plan and the APP so that performance targets are met. That exercise is in final stages. On the side of NSFAS, Chair, although NSFAS is going to give a more detailed presentation later.
I think I'll skip this one, CFO.
Good, Chair, we will skip this one. Perhaps just in line with the other entities, the bold part at the top, the suspension of the 2.5 billion and the reallocation thereof, earmarked for student devices, and the cut on the administration grant, 5.5 million rand, also similar to the other entities, mainly for personnel expenditure. On the next slide then, Chair, QCTO, their reduction, 1.928 million rand. QCTO indicated that they will be able to absorb that cut. It will have a minimal impact on their operations, and it is mainly the administration budget that has been affected, like the funded vacant positions. If we look at QCTO further, they considered the IPP targets already. They indicated that six of their targets may be required to be adjusted downwards, where envisaged numbers or turnaround time are affected by COVID-19. The adjustments, they do believe, will not negatively the quality assurance activities. Internally, they earmarked 2.680 million rand for COVID-19 actions, which include then PPEs, laptops and data. All staff work remotely currently, and the QCTO calendar has not been affected by any of the lockdown activities within the country at the moment. Chair, the last one is then on the skills side, specifically the impact of the skills levy 4-month holiday. The CETOS, as we know, had a 4-month exemption in the skills development levy from 1 May 2020 to August 2020. That in response to the COVID-19 tax relief measures announced by the Minister of Finance. It will negatively impact on various learning programs such as apprenticeships, learnerships, work-integrated learning, as well as internships. One look at the learnerships and the apprenticeships specifically, in particular, have high level of absorption in the labour market, whilst work-integrated learning ensures that learners are afforded an opportunity to complete their qualifications timeously, where work-integrated learning is embedded in the curriculum. This will have an impact also severely on the administration budgets of CETAS, as they are allowed to utilise 10.5% of levies to pay for the administration cost of the CETA, and that will have an automatic major reduction on the side of CETAS for administration costs. And we do expect that during the course of the year before around December, we may have a number of requests from CETAS to increase their administration budgets as a result of this limitation. See, the last three slides is just a reflection of the tables. We show the impact of the adjustments budget per program, then per economic classification, and lastly, also in terms of the various transfers. It's just a tabulizing of the information in terms of the numbers that we've already provided. So, Chair, I'm going to close there and hand back to you. Thank you, Jefferson.
Okay, thank you very much, CFO. Okay, DG, do you have anything to add there?
No, Chair, we budgeted your time quite properly. So okay. I think the presentation is quite comprehensive. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we then move to NSFAS?
Thank you, Chair. I just also must make sure that I load my presentation, unless I've got it here. I can see it. Can other members see that?
Yeah, we can see it, Prof.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members, colleagues, Minister. We have prepared quite a comprehensive presentation, but for the purpose, and it is to give an also update to the PCHET on some of the essence of part of our presentation. Some of the context and the statistics for the year to date, just to show that the amount of students that we funded in the university space, we've seen a 20% increase over prior year. And this was student is considered to be funded once we received his or her registration. And then you can see there's a slight difference between the funding, the registration received, and the actual payment. If you take 2020, that's about 1,400. And this shows the work that we've done to remove all of those exceptions and anomalies. The remaining anomalies are tied to the fact that we cannot validate, for instance, IDs with Department of Home Affairs, or there's a difference between the name and the ID, or that there's a difference between the course code that university presented to us and what is actually funded. And those are small details that we are still working through. So in the main, we are funding all the registrations that we have received, except for those few students that we are still having to contact and work with to clean out those anomalies. Of course, we can't fund such students until we are actually sure that there's no fraud involved. Another innovation, and I'm just going to speak high level in the interest of time to hand over to my colleague to talk about the budget implications. On a high level, we have also our work with available third-party data that we have available to us. We were able to also not only clean up the data and improve the funding allocation, but we also be able to pick up issues of fraud and corruption, issues of double funding, issues of students moving from one university to another, and therefore the N+ rule can therefore be much better enforced with these additional information that we have. Of interest is that we have, through the SARS data that we now employed, we have found 7,000 students that should not be qualifying for NSFAS, but slipped through the net because the qualification criteria that was used was coupled to the credit bureau. And so we are writing to those 7,000 students to explain why they are, to explain to us why they should, why they are funded whilst their household income is way above the threshold. So I'm just using this for illustrative purposes to show that the improved use of third-party data is certainly making us much more effective. We have shut down our head office, and we are operating from a virtual operating model from home, and we have allocated 5 million rand for additional devices for our staff and data, and we have transformed our call center to a virtual call center. And I must add that it's working much better than an actual call center, because the call center of NSFAS of 100 people cannot adequately serve 700,000 students. And through this virtual call center, we have managed to address a number of queries and sorted out a number of outstanding issues. For instance, also, all the executives are working from home. I'm working at the moment from Pretoria. But we have been able to maintain payments to institutions and students throughout this period, and we were able to make those payments prior to the end of each month, or prior to the end of each month, to enable such institutions to pay onwards. Now, this is exactly one of the big issues that we need to discuss going forward, because whilst NSFAS deliver the money in time to institutions, especially during COVID, some institutions found it very difficult to pay onwards to students, and that created quite a bit of hardship for some students. This will be solved once we move to direct payments from banks. That tender is quite far down the line, and by 2021, beginning of 2021 academic year, all TVET students will be paid directly into their bank accounts. And that should make this problem by and large go away. We hope to do similarly for university students by the start of 2022. I am hoping that NSFAS can still bring that forward, but we need to bed down the TVET environment, because that's where most of the challenges are occurring. As we speak, we already have 38 TVET colleges on the wallet system, 38 of the 51 colleges, because of the inability of the colleges to pay onward to students. In our presentation, we will make reference to the likelihood on our budget if the academic year is going to be extended by 2 or 3 months, and that is a virtual certainty. We have modeled the additional cost for NSFAS if we were to maintain allowances over that period, for the additional period of 2 to 3 years, and this, financial person, Mr. Prakash, will speak to those figures in a minute. We have also, as I've mentioned earlier, we have also seen a large jump in university beneficiaries. We expect that demand to continue to go, especially post-COVID and economic hardship, anticipated economic hardship and job losses, and we have modeled that additional impact. As we speak, NSFAS funds 42% of all university students and just over 70% of all TVET students. Should that proportion or ratio increase, it will put a big, huge challenge on our ability to fund all the applicants that qualify. So that is certainly a discussion that we are having with DHET at the moment. Just on the laptop devices and the data, the tender has closed on the 13th, which was yesterday. We will make the allocation by mid-August, and from mid-August onwards, we hope that institutions will then begin to procure. We have an extensive work done with the Chief Procurement Officer of National Treasury for the tender development. We have done work with the university, with DHET, of course, and MOAs are being put in place to manage this process going forward. That's quite a detailed process, but the aim and essence of this tender is to make sure that local industries benefit, and we have quite a big description on all of that. So I'm just going very high level through this presentation, noting that the members have had this presentation. The similar statistics are available for TVETs later in this presentation. And some of the key administrative challenges that we have faced with are also listed. We are not listing them as problems. We're just pointing them out because we are solving, and we have solved most of them as we go along. With your permission, and Chairperson, I'll hand over to Mr. Prakash Mangre to talk on Part B, which in essence deals with the purpose of this meeting, which is the impact of the budget reallocation. Over to you, Mr. Prakash Mangre.
Thank you, Administrator. Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. And good afternoon, dear colleagues. So if you can take us to the next slide there, Randall. Chairperson, as the Administrator referred to, what you see on the slide in front of you is then the budget impact of an extension of the academic year insofar as university students are concerned. In the fourth column from the left, in the green shaded line, that's the total that's expected to be disbursed in terms of the normal grant funding for the current financial year. That's 28.5 billion rand. On this assumption that there will be a three-month extension to the academic year, then the financial impact of that is that NSFAS will need an extra 4.3 billion rand over and above the actual grant allocation for the current year. This morning, the administrator approved the submission to DHET, which actually itemizes this additional funding requirement, A for universities and B for TVET colleges. So for the universities, it's 4.3 billion rand. If we go to the next slide, please, administrator.
Sorry, I have moved on. I'm not sure whether you can see it.
Yeah, we can see it now. Thank you very much. Insofar as TVET colleges are concerned, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, you'll note again in the fourth column from the left is the original allocation for, excuse me, for TVET colleges of 6.7 billion rand, and the additional amount that is required of 350 million rand is then provided for the additional month, and that's the 350.8 million that you see on the slide. Thank you, Administrator. If we can then move on. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, as the CFO of DHET referred to earlier in the departmental presentation, there were two impacts from a funding point of view on the NSFAS budget. One was a reduction of 5.5 million rand to the administration budget, and the second was a suspension of 2.5 billion rand on the bursaries budget. What you see in front of you is the slide on revenue. The shaded figure is the new number. The figure to the left of it is the number that we had reported to Peachit previously, and we've used the opportunity to share what changed from the last presentation to the current presentation. So there were three changes on the revenue piece that impact that number. The first is that the minister approved the allocation of the grant for administration to run from the 1st of April to the 20th of August, which is when the term of the administrator ends. That's 7.8 million rand, which we received as a grant. The second was a once-off grant of 36.1 million rand for four items of once-off expenditure, which we will see on the next slide. And then the third item was the reduction of 5.5 million rand in the administration grant. So those are the three changes on the revenue slide. If we can move to the next slide, Administrator.
I am moving, but it doesn't seem to...
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members and colleagues, on the goods and services line, that reflects the change in the expenditure. And the change related to the three items that I referred to on the previous slide, the first obviously would be picking up the expenditure for administration, which is 7.8 million rand for the period from 1 April to 20 August. The second is the four items of once-off expenditure which the minister approved. The first of which is costs associated with the disbursement to TVET colleges of 10.3 million rand. This relates to the costs for USSD charges incurred by students that NSFAS had to pick up the tab for. The second is contact center consultants, and this related to the period of the 2020 registrations where we had to get additional contact center assistance. The third is an increase in the forensic investigation budget, and the work of forensic investigations is detailed separately in the presentation. And the fourth that made up that one-off grant is a 10 million rand for the renovations at our Court Road premises, and that is to then be compliant with the Occupational Health and Safety Act. The third change obviously relates to the 5.5 million rand budget reduction, and that has been allocated to the cost of staff. And we are working with the chief officer in that area to then implement that change on the prioritized vacancies that had been approved by our executive. Can we move the next slide, please, Administrator? Won't reflect too much on this slide. It simply allocates the change to the programs, and it's all related to program one, which is administration. So that reflects the change in the expenditure on that. Can move to the next slide, please. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, and dear colleagues, this is the absolute bone of contention that we have an this is an open matter at the moment. The 2.5 billion rand suspension that the CFO of DHET had referred to earlier, which is what we got in a letter from the National Treasury, creates an onerous condition that NISFAS cannot comply with without disastrous consequences. Obviously, you can comply, but then there's the disastrous consequences. And what do I mean by that? So firstly, the suspension of the grant funds and the earmarking of that for student devices, in NISFAS opinion, cannot be implemented. And the reason for that is that the full original student grant funds are actually required for the normal 2020 academic year disbursements. If we had to suspend 2.5 billion rand off that, it would be then saying that we are unable to meet that portion of the obligation and we'd be having to communicate that to students. Now, from an internal funding point of view, we've worked out that the grant that we should be getting for 2020, both for university students and for TVET college students, will be utilized in totality. What we recommended in April 2020 to the minister is that we have both recovered funds and we have accumulated TVET funds. And the proposition from the administrator to the minister and subsequently to the department, to National Treasury, has always consistently been that we will use 2.1 billion rand of recovered funds for bridge funding the amount required for devices for university funds, with the objective that the bulk of that would be recovered from the teaching aid allowances of 2021, and that's generally provided for in the current policies. Insofar as the TVET space is concerned, it would be a once-off allocation, which the minister has approved, and that's 1.5 billion rand, and NISFAS contends that we will utilize accumulated TVET funds to make the payment for those devices. Until we get this approval from National Treasury, it's an onerous condition that we cannot comply with. Right now, as we speak, DHET and National Treasury are engaging to come back to NISFAS insofar as that's concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mangri. I will conclude with a slide, Chairperson, in the interest of time. So just to state that our applications for 2021 will open on 1 August and close on 13 November. I have communicated this to the Minister. We are awaiting his formal approval, but we have had in our discussions, one-on-one discussions, we discussed this in this agreement. And this will be a very important application window this year because of the expected high demand that I've stated earlier. And so we will have to be very tight on accommodating walk-ins post this period. As you will recall, in the TVET sector, walk-ins is a tradition that more than 100,000 students walk in January, and that then plays NSFAS on quite an administrative back foot to process such applications in time for payments. As the COVID conditions disallow mostly travel and big gatherings, we have planned our outreach program this year to be more of a virtual and an electronic basis. And we have plans in place for that. And we are also now strengthening our partnerships with NYDA, as well as Department of Basic Education. I've had meetings with the DG that we can make use of the school system to propagate and to propel students through the guidance system, life orientation system, to apply in time for NSFAS and to also make sure that they have all their documentation in hand. So whilst we do anticipate some travel, it will be much less than in the past, and we will have to be quite open to change if it doesn't work as well as we anticipate. We have made contacts, of course, with radio stations and with provincial departments to assist us in this virtual outreach. Our partnership with DST for the SASSA beneficiaries worked quite well last year in the last drive that we had. And we were able to push the SASSA beneficiaries to over first-time entries to over 200,000, increasing the SASSA beneficiaries by more than 100%. And we have, like I said, made contact with lots of community-based organizations, churches, national libraries. We have also mapped with the CSIR the coverage, the Wi-Fi coverage in South Africa, to make sure that we reach rural areas where students can go and make use of our portal services to enroll. So I will conclude with this one because I think the purpose of this meeting is mostly got to do with the issues around the reallocation of the budget. The rest of the slides are merely for information, and I will be guided by you, Chair, how we should deal with it if there is time. But I think I will add back to you to guide me on whether we should conclude and deal with the main purpose of this meeting.
Are you done, Doc?
Yes, Chairperson. I said, let me conclude and hand back to you because we have covered the main purpose of this meeting. The additional slides are merely there for additional information. If you have time, we can certainly deal with it because there's some important information that we would like to share with the PCHET, but we don't want to erode the purpose of this meeting.
Okay. No, my apologies. I got affected by load shedding, so can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Chair.
Okay. Dr. Carolison seems like he's not...
Sorry, sir. I'm mute because I also have challenges with my power. So, but I leave my microphone on now.
Okay. I'm saying you still have some 10 minutes according to the time allocation. If there's anything you need to share with us,
okay. So, thank you, Jim. So, perhaps I should then just deal with the. We have spoken about the digital devices. Perhaps I should deal with the issue of the forensics that we are currently have underway. On the basis of our human resources forensics, we have
some people have already resigned, and we are charging some people on that. I think more importantly, though, is the issue of fraud and corruption in general. We have uncovered some syndicates that are still active in some of the people that we previously charged that were arrested have now come forward as whistleblowers, and it is clear to us that there are still syndicates operating within this first. And the syndicates has got to do with those students that are created, or opportunities for students to enter the system without having to go through the economic qualification criteria. I have discussed this in detail with the minister, and we are talking to the law enforcement authorities to expedite some of the investigations, because as you can imagine, it's very difficult to operate in an environment where you know there's syndication. So we are working on it, and I think we are going to move forward much quicker. We are also working very closely with the commercial crime unit, and further people will be arrested based on some of the whistleblowing that we have received. So the question is basically, what does it say about the general state of NISFAS? In general, the general state of NISFAS is evidenced or is evinced by the fact that we are able to deliver on time and process on time with a minimum of disruption and pay to the correct students. So overall, I don't want to leave the impression that because of this uncovering of syndicated fraud, that is now a debilitating impact on this first. On the contrary, we have much better employee relationships, and our staff is working much longer hours, and they are much more accountable during this COVID period and assisting each other to make sure that we deliver on time. We've had some bad publicity. I'm not going to deal with that because I haven't received any communication from the public protector. But as I am very comfortable stated to the minister and on radio, that many of these things are rehashed, it's slanderous, it is absolute, and I can actually use a strong term, absolute rubbish that people are putting out there to divert attention from us instituting the action against people that did bad things. One of the issues that we are still faced with is the irregular appointments of staff prior to the administration. There was an allocation made for NISFAS to be capacitated with technical capacity, and some 25 to 30, I'm not sure whether it's the right figure, 25 to 30, depends on who you speak to, senior executives were appointed against that allocation, as opposed to appointments, technical appointments, which was then required. Some of these appointments are irregular. 5 executives were appointed against one position at the appointment for at a challenge of 1.5 million rand. And those are some of the issues that I'm somebody dealing with. I hope to have all of this dealt with by the time of the end of my administration, which is the end of August. But those are some of the headaches that we deal with. We have removed these people from the normal operations to suspend them because we found extreme amount of non-cooperation and in fact, even sabotage happening organization. So we were forced to take this, move these people out of the operations and suspend them. The issue of the end of the administration, I'm not going to discuss much about that. The minister and myself have had discussions about the handover, and we are both committed to make sure that it's a smooth handover. We have appointed 4 senior executives already, 3 black females and 1 colored female. The outstanding appointment is still the CFO, which we are busy interviewing for. We have completed interviews for CEO position, but we did not find the correct candidate, and we will have to now go out on a headhunting exercise. So, senior executive and the minister has appointed a board, and appropriate handover has taken place from the administrator to normalize operations within NISFAS. And NISFAS should then revert back to normal governance as is required by the Act. As we all know, an administration, the imposition of an administration is a very drastic step, and it is a step that is sometimes necessary, but it also is not
at all times desirable to have so much power concentrated in one person, being both the board and at both the executive authority. So I think I've used up my 9 minutes, but I'll hand back to you, Chair. Of course, I'm willing to discuss any of these aspects that we've raised.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Carol Lisson. I think that concludes the presentation. I think I must thank you for your presentation. I see that although we requested that you should brief us on the budget and the budget cuts, but I think you did well by giving us information about all that is happening in the organization, including managing the transition, which is a very important information for ourselves. I'm going to take hands. I've seen Honorable Bozoli's hand was up. Can I get some more hands? Okay. It does look like it's only Honorable Bozoli now. I've seen members coming in and out. It does look like this load shedding is really impacting badly on our meeting. Well, myself too, I was affected. I had to use the small gadget that I had to charge earlier. But it looks like other members are being affected. Okay, I see Honorable Nodada. Honorable Nodada. Okay, let's take these two honorable members for now. But maybe just to say with the dear head, one of the things that we had asked for is for us to have a sense of the budget cuts that has been announced. To what extent are they going to have an impact on the APP, which is a matter that the minister was talking to. We are interested in understanding what are the priorities that you are going to have to abandon for this financial year? What are the priorities that you are going to pursue? So I thought that in as much as we are going to present the figures, it would have been better that you also present the areas where it has impacted on the department in terms of the APP. So I'm not sure whether, as the minister was saying, that we may need to find another period where we are going to have that discussion. But unfortunately, you know, we are working within a very strict timelines. We have to finalize all this thing by the 17th and submit our report to Parliament so that it can be published in the ATC. So between now and the 17th, which is Friday, I'm not sure whether we'll find such a time to have this discussion. But that certainly is something that I would have wanted us to have, so that we can understand what is it that you are not going to do as a result of the budget cuts. But anyway, let me take the members and then we will get some responses. Honorable Mamaniso will be the third. Okay. Start with the Honorable Bozoli.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for your presentations. The first thing is about not being declared a frontline, a frontline sector. I think that is outrageous. that education as a whole, basic and higher, should not have been declared frontline. Millions and millions of people are served by these departments, and you know, without people going to school and university, the entire economy over the next few years will be damaged. So I do want to ask you, who decides what a frontline department is, and what is the definition of a frontline department? And I do believe that we should appeal against that, and we should ask for education to be declared a frontline department. But just a few other questions. As far as the suspended funds are concerned, now, to me, that is a little bit of a confidence trick, because they are suspended, these funds, so it looks as though they're not being taken away from the department, but they actually are being taken away from the department, because they cannot be used to be spent on the things that are normally that they're normally used for. So the 6.734 billion that is suspended in the Department of Higher Education may not affect the bottom line, but it does mean funds aren't being used for their original purposes, and that is a huge worry. Whereas the frontline departments are receiving funds to help them cope with COVID, the higher education department is having to find its own funds out of a very stretched budget to fund its own COVID response. So I must say, I find the whole thing extremely concerning, and I think we should protest. Now, what to follow on the first question, particularly in universities, it is very unclear what is not being funded. So my question to you is, what are the main things that are not going to be funded in universities from the 5.7 billion, which seems to have been both suspended and removed from university funding? That is a lot of money, and we really are not clear as to what is not being funded there. Second question, the thousands of students whose training is being funded by the CPIC. Now, that is a huge problem. Yeah.
There is some noise. I'm not sure whether it's coming from your side.
It's a piece of paper. I'll try and stop it. Sorry.
From the
mic. Is that better?
Yeah.
As far as the skills levy goes, we're looking at CETA funding falling by nearly half. So that means half the number of students are going to be trained. Now, that again is a huge problem. And it seems as though it hasn't really been looked into in detail, and we would like more detail on that. Can I just ask, the extended academic year, thank you for all those figures on the costs of the extended academic year, but the costs you give assume that fees will not have to be paid for those extended months, but how much of a guarantee do you have that particularly universities are not going to actually ask for fees for those months? Do you have a guarantee of that? Next one, no CEO yet in NSFAS. How likely is it that you'll get a CEO by August when the administrator ends his term? And what will the effect be on NSFAS of not having a CEO and again going free-floating in a very crucial period? Then on your the suspension issue, where when NSFAS has objected to the suspension of 2.5 billion rand, quite rightly, I believe. But you propose an alternative source of funds for that 2.5 billion rand. What are the recovered funds that you mentioned there, recovered university funds? And what are the accumulated TVET funds that you say could rather be used for this 2.5 billion rand cost of devices for students? And then lastly, NSFAS still has syndicates committing fraud within it. I mean, that's quite a shocking statement. And, you know, it does need to be, you need to clarify, well, what is being done about that? Those are my main questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Zone, Honorable Nodada.
Thanks, Chair. I hope I'm orderly and you can see me.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Good afternoon again to everybody. Thanks for the presentations. I think the first point I would just like to maybe reiterate and emphasize is the point that Professor Bozzoli raises, the Chair, of the education being a frontline ministry or department, if you want to put it that way. And I think the point is well made, and I think that should be taken up because it's highly linked to the skills that we need to develop for our economy and for us to move forward financially. Just to the minister indicated that they would have required more time to prepare this particular presentations on the budget and how it will affect, you know, the APPs in terms of the numbers versus impact. I don't know, maybe the minister would like to indicate, you know, to us as to how much, you know, what would be sufficient time and whether, Chair, you know, there would be possible feedback or detail brought back to us and maybe before we debate this as to the numbers versus the actual impact. That's just a question in passing. Then to the department, in terms of the presentation, I just wanted to check on the following. Based on the funds that have now been cut, does the department have a particular contingency plan to mitigate the shortfall of the budget? If we can maybe give guidance on that. And then in terms of page 77 of the supplementary budget review, of the budget adjustment. There has been an explanation there that at least $1 billion has been taken away from university and TVET infrastructure and efficiency grant, which was allocated for the construction of new university sites and sites of TVET colleges. What are the plans? What plans are in place to recover these funds to complete the intended project? When I was listening to the presentation, there was an indication that no funds would be taken away from infrastructure. Based on that particular page, there is an indication of at least $1 billion being taken away. So if you can maybe indicate what plans are in place to recover the funds to complete the project, at least on the 19th of September. And then how was the target of an IT-level confidence that we aim to achieve, be achieved, if there's any limitation on that? And then, as we all know, that the certification backlog is part of the great concerns. The Deputy Minister at some point has indicated that day zero would come in March 2020. And that the question is, what is the status on the day zero of the certification backlog? How will the suspension of the computer services for data lines and software for TVET exam systems impact the certification backlog process as indicated on table 17.2 of the adjustments of the budget? And then the last two questions to the department. In terms of, you have indicated the CHE, which has had challenges in terms of affecting courses on time, particularly for universities, and you had indicated that SACO will be getting cuts, and you were saying that they were comfortable in terms of being able to absorb these particular cuts, and I wanted to check whether they'll be able to still fulfill their mandates in terms of them making sure that courses are credited on time, and that SACO is able to produce and contribute to the certification of the qualifications that students actually go and get. And then the last question is, how does the 2020 academic year impact curriculum development moving beyond, particularly for the TVET sector? And then moving to NSPAS, Chair, very quickly, I wanted to check in terms of NSPAS. Are they think Professor Bedeli did touch on this. There has been an objection that you have lodged, and what is the status of the response from Treasury based on the proposals that you've made? And maybe when you do answer Professor Bedeli's question, might get detail of as to where you're saying that particular money might come from. And then in terms of the implications of the budget cuts that you have for the 2020 annual performance plan that you put forward, what are the implications of that? And then lastly, based on the proposal that you've made in terms of TVET colleges being able to submit the registration templates directly or the results directly to NSFAS to fast track the funding statuses, have those institutions been approached? What is the specified plan around that? And then I think the last question in terms of the impact of the extension of the academic year for 2021 has been covered from my side. I think I'll end that there, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Nodata. Honorable Mananis.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I would like to welcome the presentation and note that one of the things that you have noted of the impact of this budget to in terms of this COVID-19 thing, I think it's one of the things that I would want clarity on it. And on the issue of vacancies that needs to be filled, I just want to check with the head, when are they going to resume the recruitment process? And as well, which post are they going to uphold and the ones that they are going to advertise? The other issue is with regards to what not that they have said on the issue of the revised calendar 2020 and the impact thereof. And lastly, Chairperson, I want to just check with all the DHET in terms of gender-based violence, what is it that they have in plan with regards to their adjustment budget? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Mananiso. Can I check, Honorable Mkatra, are you back? Not yet. Honorable Litsie, are you back? Honorable Kietzi? Okay, we seem to have lost the members. this load shedding seems like it's wreaking havoc across the country. And it's coming at a time when we are working from home. So we are working on the virtual platform. And so if there is no energy, if there is no electricity, then it means that our work is going to be impacted upon. But otherwise, it's one of those things. And I think the new leadership of ESCOM must pull up their socks. I mean, we have had about 3 months of hard lockdown where there was not enough economic activity that was happening. And still, we are still experiencing this load shedding. I mean, it's really unacceptable. But otherwise, that's something that does not fall within our our scope. So let's just continue with our work now. On the issues. Okay, on the department, I just need to find out whether the preliminary work that we have to do to prepare for the University of Science and Innovation in Ekurhuleni, is it going to be affected by this budget cuts? That's the first point. I saw that there is a lot of money that has been taken away from infrastructure grant for the TVETs. Now, that is on top of the current bad infrastructure that already is there in the TVET space. I did know that the CFO did indicate that already the current projects are not going to be affected because there's money that has been sent to the colleges. So my question is, what exactly is going to be affected by especially the infrastructure grants for the TVET colleges? Exactly what has been planned? Exactly what is it that's going to be impacted on the infrastructure for the TVET? TVET colleges. And what is the discussion around the skills levy? Is it lost for good, or is it something that has been delayed? Because that's quite a substantial amount of money. It's almost 42% of skills levies that are going to be lost as a result of that payment holiday. There were discussions that I was aware of that probably it must be delayed. Is that still the case, or is the matter closed and this money is completely lost to the skills sector? Okay, that is on DHET. As I said, I would have loved to get to understand the priorities that are going to be done away with. On NSFAS, once again, I think I must thank the administrator for the report, and I think that the report has been very comprehensive. There are parts that we have not spoken to that I myself has been going through, and I think it's a lot of information to us. But just as a word of advice, administrator, I know that you are very irritated about these allegations that keeps on surfacing in the media, some of which have been extensively dealt with in this portfolio committee in the past. It's quite irritating that things get recycled and repeated and all of that. But I think you must for always keep your cool. You must always be calm. You must not use emotive language. Because if you say that this thing is simply nonsense, and you say it in this platform of parliament, it's not something that is really acceptable. So try to be cool at all times. Where I'm sitting, I know that some of the issues we have dealt with about nepotism, about targeting of staff and all of that. But we have to confront matters with facts. At all times, we must seek to be factual when responding to some of the issues. And so, although I'm quite happy with the responses, and I think that some of these matters, you know, at some point must just be laid to rest. When we came in this parliament, when we came into the committee, some of us individually, we were confronted with lots of allegations. This and that, the administrator is paging people and all of that. And when we dealt with the annual report, I think twice in Cape Town, we put this thing to the table, we interrogated them. And some of these things, allegations were found to be wanting. And I think at some point, all the issues, it's unfortunate that Honorable Holomisa is not coming to our committee, although I know that is supposed to be alternate or something like that. He's not coming to the committee, and I've seen his letter. And I think that at some point, this matter has to be ventilated here. I acknowledge the responses of Dr. Carolison. But sometimes it's not good for the organization that things keep on being recycled out there. Some of which, as I said myself, that we have interrogated as members of parliament, and we found that there is no merit in some of those allegations. So, but please don't use that language again, Dr. Carolison. Now, my last question is on the 4 million. Is it the 4 billion that is projected to be required in case the 2020 academic year moves beyond 2020 and it gets concluded in the first 3 or 4 months of 2021? Now, what are the discussions taking place? Do you think that you will be able to secure this in case the academic year moves towards the first quarter of next year? Has there been discussions with Treasury? The issue about the objection, I think Honorable Bozoli has raised, and I think I'm also interested in getting feedback as to what is the attitude of Treasury towards the objection that you've raised about the reallocation of the 2.5 billion. Otherwise, those are the questions. I'm not sure if members are back, or Honorable Mkasha looks like he's back. Honorable Mkasha.
Thanks, Chair. Am I audible?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. It's just been a bit tough this morning with the load shedding. Chair, I think that perhaps one must just reiterate that that education is a fundamental part of any country's success in terms of ensuring its people's economic participation and success. And so one's also interested in understanding how the Command Council looks at or Cabinet looks at which departments would be frontline departments or not. So I'd like to echo the sentiments that were generated. I also tell what you've said, got talking for any academic. I want to understand how administrative costs would go up. However, costs that are attributed to the actual funding of students seem to have remained the same, despite the administrator alluding to the fact that the demand for NAFSIS eligible students is rising. If one can just have clarity with regards to that that element, and then Chair, I'm also interested in understanding what that difference has come with creating a call centre as opposed to the one that the administrator refers to being 100 personnel in the in the call centre. So what's the difference between the virtual one and the one with the 100 bodies? Because if there has been a better running of matters or not students with regards to having this virtual one, one would be interested in understanding how it actually functions, and perhaps alluding to the fact that it needs to be something that we look into sustaining in ensuring that the inquiries of students are addressed more quickly. Chair, from my side, that will be it for now. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Comrade Whip. I hope from my side you are not very clear, so I hope everybody else did manage to pick what you're saying. Okay. Honorable Letsie, you back? Yes. Okay. Let's then hand over to the DG as well as the administrator of NSFAS. We'll start with DHET.
Thank you very much. Indeed, the matters that you are raising, sir, are quite fundamental and very much important in respect to this engagement. Some questions are quite big, but we will try. The declaration in respect to the categories of departments, insofar as determining which department should be declared as a front line. When we engaged with the National Treasury, because that's how far we could go, we were told that they are simply implementing a cabinet decision. I think it's important to note that. On our engagements then, we sought to work out with them as to how best a negative impact could be mitigated, taking into consideration that the sector is already underfunded and is hugely volatile. It is then that the idea of suspending these funds and reallocating them came into picture, was to mitigate a negative impact that would have occurred in the system. And if you look generally, the areas that then had to be targeted for cuts are more softer areas. That is your logistical arrangements, accommodation, traveling, and also part of employment, compensation of employees. Instead of filling posts now, you delay for about 6 months or so in order to buy time. So those were the very hard engagements that we got into. We succeeded to a very large extent to shield NSFAS as well from any cut that would have occurred, taking into consideration the impact of 20% that would have put us at 19.5 billion that had to go, where that would have come from. I think it's a matter that the honorable members should actually acknowledge, and the discussions then that have actually ensued with the National Treasury on the basis of what they put to us as the implementation of a cabinet decision. The second issue, which is critical, which the chair touched on, the biggest challenge now engaged with the National Treasury, which I think itself will end up in cabinet, because we have tentatively arranged with them that would need a special cabinet memorandum in respect to the extension, the inevitable extension of the academic year. It's obvious it's going to spill over to the first quarter of next year. And it has got huge financial implications. And all this, Chair, is happening against the background of the economy having contracted by 7.2%, which has led to the soaring of unemployment figures, you know, in the country, and is having an impact across, and we're feeling it. The Honorable Chair is speaking quite very eloquently on this question of what are the immediate impact in respect to Strat Plan and APPs as we are looking now at some amendments that should be effected. This, Chair, we are not doing just for the department as this head office. It's a matter which is affecting the entire system, institutions, TVET colleges, community education and training colleges. We've been engaging them. We're finalizing now the inputs that have actually come through. But in our assessment, thus far in what has come out and what we've worked on quite very hard, 24/7 to this point, is that there are no changes to the Strat Plan thus far and no substantial changes to the APP, except that we are shifting in near delivery dates. So in order to accommodate this current situation, we are also including interventions to mitigate COVID as an addendum to both the Strat Plan as well as the APP. So we're looking at concluding. As we're talking with you now, we've been engaging with the President yesterday because of certain interventions insofar as employment relief interventions that we must take into consideration and factor them on our APPs right now. As we are meeting with you, we started a meeting with a team from the presidency to tease out this proposal. There is some allocation that we are getting in there. We are meeting them at 4:30 again because the feeling from them is that what they are putting up must be factored into our APPs now, because it's something that we have to work on and deliver, create these relief employment opportunities, even if it's for 6 months or so. So there are those engagements, Chair, that are currently going on at the present moment. So I will ask my colleagues to come in, the CFO as well as branch heads, in respect to the pertinent questions that have been asked, Chair, with your permission. But I thought it's important to share with the Portfolio Committee this background and how precarious have we been handling the situation to try to mitigate a negative impact that could have been quite huge in the system. And I think Treasury officials have actually come to the party in assisting, in alleviating any hugely negative impact that would have occurred in the system. I think we need to commend them for that. There are still engagements that are taking place, you know, at the present moment, because we are talking about huge monies from the standpoint of the department in this respect. Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe the CFO would come in, and then Dai, Aruna and other colleagues will come in. Thank you, Chair. CFO.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you, DG Chairperson. Chair, I would want to recommend that the branch heads first address the relevant questions to this sector.
Just switch on your video.
I did, Chair, but it's not showing for some odd reason. It says it's on, but it doesn't show anything. Chair, there were very few questions or limited questions in relation to the budget itself.
Okay.
That we now translate to address the sectors.
Oh, can you hear me?
Can you hear? Yes, Chair.
Okay, work on your camera there. Let's get to the next one of your colleagues who wants to come in the skills branch. And Dr. Parker later.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. The area I want to respond to Chairperson and honorable members is what has been raised in particular by Professor Bozoli, that CETA's almost half of the learners will be affected by this process. I must mention, Chairperson and honorable members, that currently, as the department, the DG has mentioned, we are currently revising our APP and strategic plan. And it's quite very clear with the indication so far that the numbers of learners or students placed in workplace-based learning programs are going to be reduced from 170,000, which is currently our target. The number of learners entering artisanal programs, our target for this year is 30,500. That also is going to be reduced down. The number of artisans found competent with our target of 24,500, that number is going to be reduced. A number of learners who are completing learnerships, our target is 50,000. That number is going to be reduced. Our number of learners who are completing internships, that number is going to be reduced as well from 7,000. I must also mention, Chairperson and honorable members, that adding to this is the availability of the workplaces themselves. It is estimated that in South Africa, under LET Level 5, we had about 40% of the workforce. Under LET Level 4, we had about 55% of the workforce working. Under alert level 3, 71% of the workforce which is working. And under alert level 2, about 94% of the workforce which will be working. And under alert level 1 is going to be 100% of the workforce that will be working. It's the study that was done by the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at the University of Witwatersrand, VETS. So this also, coupled with the skills levy holiday, it's having impact because employers are challenged to bring in their workforce as well as to bring learners. Though impressing upon and the minister in each and every available opportunity when he's addressing the media, is always appealing to employers to ensure as they prioritize employees coming back, they must also prioritize learners. I must also comfort the members of the Honorable Committee that we are not going to interfere with the strategic plan, meaning which then therefore that this will only be applying for the annual performance plan for 2020 for the current financial year. Chairperson is also raising another important issue as to whether this money of skills development levy will be coming back this holiday. I must mention, Chairperson and honorable members, that I've had a session with the National Treasury team that was early in May, because we sought a clarity around this particular area. But colleagues, they said to us under no uncertainty terms that this is the money that is for God. Meaning we stand there for Chairperson is the money that we are not going to get it back. But then it's very important, Chairperson, as well, to read this together with the Draft Disaster Management Act Relief Bill, as well as the Draft Disaster Management Act Relief Administration Bill. All these bills were published, and the Minister of Finance, when he was doing presentation in his occasion of the Supplementary Budget Review on the 24th June 2020, he also presented these bills. Amongst others, one in section 11, subsection 1, it mentions that any employer, as defined in section 1 of the Skills Development Levies Act 99, Act number 9 of 1999, must be exempt from liability and payment. In terms of section 3 of that act of the levy, as defined in section 1 of that act. If also, Chairperson and honorable members, you go back into the supplementary budget review that was presented, the longer version of it. In page 32, there is a mentioning of about 9 tax relief measures. One of the measures that is stipulated there is the one with regards to skills development levy. It reads, a 4-month exemption in the skills development levy from 1 May 2020, implying then therefore that this will be up until 2 August 2020. We are, Chairperson and honorable members, currently sitters are busy revising their strategic plans as well as annual performance plans. So with regards to sitters, we'll be able to have the total picture once we have received all these planning documents, of which are due this week. I will stop there for the time being, Chairperson. Once again, thank you very much to the Chairperson and honorable members.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mvalo. You have been very, very detailed in explaining the impact on the skills development in the sector. Dr. Parker?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and honorable members. I think from the university education sector, one of the questions asked by Professor Bazzoli was, what is not funded? As was explained, the net effect is a cut in a block grant of $382 million, which has a net effect of approximately a 1% a cut in each of the institution's block grant subsidy. So that would have been funds that would have been discretionary funds to utilize for their operations and so on. Now, what we've engaged with every university around the country, what is really happening is that there are savings being made at the level of the institution from issues such as international visits, travel, accommodation, those kinds of activities that a university would normally be involved in but that are not continuing during this particular time. Many universities have also decided to delay the implementation of vacancies, so they are just stretching those out a bit in order to save funds. Then there's the additional money that had to be spent on unforeseen circumstances, particularly linked to the COVID health and safety issues on campuses. That's going to kick in now. But there's been a three-month period where there's been savings on electricity and on activities not happening on campuses. So the effect has been really kept at a minimum. When it comes to infrastructure, the $500 million cut is significant, and it is for this particular financial year, but all institutions do have projects that are underway. And the effect of this is really to extend the projects out, because what we will have to do is ensure that in the following years of the MTEC, we provide those funds back to the universities so that they are able to complete the project. We've been very careful to ensure that all projects that are currently underway will be able to continue. And it's the projects that hadn't yet been started that will be affected in terms of having to start a little bit later. And, you know, obviously in the longer run, this will have some financial impact on costs. So the real effect is a slowing down. It's not a stopping of the infrastructure. But given the disaster, this is, you know, one of the things that have to happen. In terms of the funding to support the institutions, the reprioritization internally to support the institutions, we have looked at earmarked grants that would normally be used for projects, other kinds of projects across the system, and looked at reprioritizing the for those kinds of projects. For example, the University Capacity Development Program, we have had some changes in what was funded to ensure that we can fund the remote teaching and learning plans more effectively. We've also had some changes in a reprioritizing of funds from some of the other grants, and particularly from interest earned on grants, to enable universities to utilize those for supporting the additional costs that come from the health and safety aspects at universities. I think the question, Honorable Chair, about the University of Science and Innovation, the project is not going to be stopped. The feasibility will take place. The only thing is, given the first part of this year, that we're not able to start that work, we probably, the actual timing of it will change. So we're going to, in our APP, move the target out a little, so it's unlikely to be completed within this financial year, but it will be completed early in the next financial year. The work will have to start when we're able to get back into more face-to-face work on the basis of that. The last question really is the issue of the fees for the university system and the extension of the academic year, the impact of that. There has been extensive discussions with all the universities and the private accommodation providers to discuss this, to try to understand how we might mitigate against that impact. And really the proposal is that we'll be looking at the two academic years, and we will be looking at a stretching out of the costs this academic year, and I suppose a compression next academic year, which is likely to be a shorter academic year. Most of the institutions' plans show that we're going to be finishing probably by the end of February, this current academic year, and the next academic year will start slightly later than it would normally have started, but we will be finishing it in the calendar year. We're currently working on a draft gazette, which has been consulted across the system, and we hope that the minister will be able to publish that in the next few weeks to guide the system around the issue of university fees and accommodation fees. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Who's supposed to come in?
Can I come in? It's Aruna. Aruna okay. Singh for the Chibe.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to the Honorable Members. On the issue raised by the Honorable Nadara, but how will the curriculum get completed for TVET students? As we know, there's a revised academic calendar, which contained the academic year to just two trimesters instead of three and one semester instead of two. I'll just put my camera on. I hope it's okay. Yes. And so that was adjusted already. And the full year program, which is the National Certificates Vocational, the students, the calendar has accommodated them. But with that said,
we can see you now.
Oh, okay. I just need to reposition this maybe. Yes, okay. But despite that, Chair, it is right now it is extremely challenging in the colleges, given where we are with the pandemic and students having returned from June and the rapid rise in positive cases. What we are seeing is campuses opening and closing, on a regular basis. So obviously that creates instability in the teaching and learning process. What we have agreed is where this is happening, the colleges must prioritize lives and they must shut down to do or to implement all the protocols that they have been provided with. And, the students who are currently registered are prioritized. That is why as much as we have made provision for two trimesters, and the first trimester students have started exams. They are already into the third week of writing the exams as the engineering students. If it gets untenable to register another cohort of trimester students, it's something we will have to consider, considering how things pan out until the end of August when the next trimester should register. So in short, we are prioritizing our students who are currently registered to complete their trimester, to complete their semester, and to complete the year courses. The exams have been scheduled, and that is the situation. They will complete the curriculum in terms of that calendar. The only other issue I picked up from the Honourable Members was, or from yourself, Honourable Chair, is how will the cut in the infrastructure for TVET colleges, the $370 million, truly affect the colleges and what these funds were going to be used for. So, Chair, in this regard, I mean, losing any amount of money has some impact, but this has been minimized by the fact that this was a new grant and it came in the 2018-19 financial year. And for that year, $1.3 billion was already paid to the colleges. And for the 1920 financial year, over $1 billion has gone to college. So in total, $2.4 billion is already sitting with the colleges of this funding. Now, as we know, the spending has been very slow with the colleges. And even if new money came in at this stage, they would not be in a position to spend that. But the impact, exactly what you asked, what would be the impact, is that this is not money for capital projects. It's not money for new infrastructure. It is purely for repairs and maintenance. And the work is done based on work packages, which the colleges have to submit plans for. So what it really means is that the colleges will then reprioritize these plans in terms of the repairs and maintenance activities that they have planned. And clearly you know, it will be those that feature the bottom of the list in the plans that will not be delivered, which means it's a reprioritization of the repairs and maintenance if no new money comes after 2 years, for example. So that will really be the final impact down the road. As we know, the repairs and maintenance also are not across the board. They are confined to the teaching and learning space. So in terms of those plans, the colleges will have to reprioritize, and there may have to be a few activities across the 50 colleges that they will not be able to deliver on in the next 2 years that they had planned. That would be the final impact. I recall those two questions, Chair. If there's anything I missed, I can be reminded. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Aruna. Can we get back to the CFO?
President, I still can't get the camera to work. But from our side, I don't think there's anything specific that was financially related except the matters that Aruna and Dr. Park already addressed. So unless there's any specific explanations required, you're welcome. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Next time when you come to attend the Portfolio Committee CFO, make sure that your gadgets function and it functions properly. I don't think it's acceptable that we can get the gadget of a very senior official in the department, especially when we discuss finances. We can't see the face of the CFO. So I don't think that is acceptable. Please improve on that next time when you come to the committee. Can we move to NSFAS? Gigi, are you fine?
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the
question. Just before that, Gigi, are we done with the DHEAD? Are you okay? Okay, all right, let's move on, Dr. Carlson.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the questions. Dr. Parker has dealt with the issue of tuition fees for the event of an extension of a academic year. So our modeling was done on the allowance basis. What would be the additional allowance that will be required for those students? And that's why we arrived at the 4 billion rand. It is a modeling exercise. And as Dr. Parker has pointed out, there's still discussions around the compression even of the residence and an accommodation. To what extent that can be compressed to ease the burden on this on the fiscus. So this model number that we came up with is not yet included in the planning going forward. So that is a discussion still to be had. I think let me just remind members on the origin of the device proposal, the origin of a proposal for providing this for students with devices. You will recall that students are receiving 5,200 rand per month. The university students, let me first deal with them, receive 5,200 rand per year for a teaching aid allowance. It was in the past wrongly referred to as a book allowance. And we have been encouraging universities, even prior to COVID, to begin to apply some of that, those funds to technology enablement to extend the classroom beyond just the physical classroom. And some universities actually did follow that advice, and even before the tender is completed, some universities, some 16 of the universities, have already begun to apply that teaching aid allowance for the provision of laptops. And so we have just short of 100,000 laptops that are already out there with students with some of these universities. When COVID struck, some universities then contacted NSFAS and say they've already paid out the teaching aid allowance to the students, and therefore they are now stuck or they can't pay for devices. We then looked at options, and we said we want this to be a zero-sum game. In other words, it must not be an additional budget cost to the fiscus. And we then agreed, and of course there are nuances that we have to emphasize, that we probably will have to take into account, but by and large, we then said we will then fund students against next year's teaching aid allowance. So we'll provide you with a bridging finance for next year. So theoretically, in principle, the universities should be a zero-sum game. And of course, some students that will exit the system must be taken into account, and some final year students must be taken into account. But that was the whole intent on the basis of the document that I presented to the minister. The question was, where would this bridging fund come from? So we have 3.6 billion rand in recovered funds. That is funds from debts that we have collected from students when they were still in the loan system, or from the loan system regime. And the idea is that this money will be put back, because some of this money is used also to fund us in the first quarter of each year whilst we await our first tranche from National Treasury. So it's really our cash flow that we have to manage in that particular perspective. For the TVET colleges, we saw then, and we recommended such, that TVET colleges will benefit during and post-COVID from having their students equipped with digital devices and data. And we had a savings on some of the TVET expenditure over the past 2 years, and we recommended a once-off injection to pay for 2020 to get this process kick-start. So going forward, the continuation of this program of digital devices to TVET students will have to come from other allocations in the TVET space. So that was the whole rationale, that NSFAS, that we don't incur any further significant additional cost except for the TVET sector, which never received any teaching aid allowances in the past. And on that basis, we made the recommendation. Of course, the whole recommendation is available and is in the minister's office. So the issue of I asked Mr. Prakash Mangri to talk about the objection that we are lodging and the onerous implications for us. The issue of demand that is rising for NSFAS eligible students. So post the announcement of fee-free education, we saw an uptick of about 5% in university uptake of university NSFAS students, and that pushed, and that certainly this year shot up by 20%. And so the demand is increasing at a much faster pace than what any previous model anticipated. And it's only logical to my mind that given the post-COVID environment of unemployment and hardship, that we are probably going to see a steep hike in the NSFAS demand. Now, whether we can meet that demand or whether we should meet that demand is a policy issue, and certainly more discussion should be happening around that. We have modeled different scenarios, and we have passed, I don't know whether we did so, but we are in discussion, and we have, or if we have not done so, we'll pass that over to DHET so that we can begin to look at managing this demand as opposed to be overwhelmed by this demand when the new academic year starts. The issue of the virtual call center vis-a-vis a physical call center is an interesting thing. So in a physical call center, the call center agents are confronted with mostly, aggravated or irritated or angry students. And in that very short space of time, they have to then sort out quite difficult queries. Now, with a virtual call center, we have actually reverted to a query system resolution with different escalation levels. And so we receive our queries through email, through SMS, and even on my own Twitter account. And they are then categorized, and they are dealt with on level one. If they are more complex, they are dealt with on the next level, level two or tier two, as we refer to. And then the more complex cases are dealt with on a tier three level. And that we find to be much more effective than call center agents trying to contain hundreds of calls, trying to fulfill a quota, and not being successful at resolution. So I think the main point I want to bring across is that we are more focused on resolution of cases, or case management, if I can put it that way, as opposed to just answering calls. So certainly going forward, we will factor that into our operating model going forward, and make sure that we take the gains or the learnings that we have from this COVID environment forward and make sure that we incorporate them. On the issue of no CEO, the minister will pronounce on that. We have gone through all the formal recruiting protocols and interviews and checks and validations and all of those things. And we have not found a CEO yet that matched the spec that we have put out. Now, the spec is very highly, is a very high spec, and it should be. And the person that we are looking for should have a multiplicity of talents and a multiplicity of skills. If you look at the wide stakeholders that, that such a person must interact with, a wide range of stakeholders, I should say, and the financial skills and a whole host of other skills that this person has. So there are new processes being kicked in, but it would not be appropriate of me to comment on that. Suffice to say that both myself and the minister are committed to a very orderly transition and not losing the gains that we have established over the period of administration. Thank you, Chair, and I take your words to heart, which you have directed at me. I hope I've covered everything. Prakash, would you like to just comment on some of the financial issues that I may have skipped over?
Thank you, Administrator. Once again, good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and Honourable Colleagues. The question related to the status of the onerous condition, and NISFAS initially approached Public Finance at the National Treasury, who then communicated to advise that the communication to National Treasury has to be via the department, which is then what we obviously undertook. And we've been working with the department in that regard. So the current status in terms of the dialogue between the department and the public finance unit would best be shared by, I would imagine, the DG and the CFO of DHET, Chairperson. So that's where that matter would lie. But suffice to say, as I indicated earlier, and perhaps just to sketch it very, very simply, that if we had to implement this condition, it would really amount tantamount to irregular expenditure being incurred, and that would result in an audit qualification from the Auditor General. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Back.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm not sure whether the DM is in the house. I saw earlier on he was struggling to log in. Okay. The Deputy Minister has not been able to log in. The Minister did. Oh, DM.
I'm here. Yes, okay. I'm here, Chair. Thank you. I think there was just a challenge with my network, but I'm here. I've been listening in. Thank you.
You want to make the closing comments?
No, Chair. I think I'm good. I think both the DG and DDGs and also the administrator have handled the inquiries quite well. I haven't had any specific questions for me. I think there was just one member who mentioned me, but I think all the questions have been aptly covered. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, DM. I think let's wrap up. There was a question by Honourable Nodada to the Minister. We did indicate that the Minister is going to be asking for leave so that he can attend to some other matters. He has got a presentation to make, I think, 2 o'clock at the National Coronavirus Council. So he asked to be excused. So that question, I'm sure it will be submitted to the Minister, and then the Minister can indicate his response. If the DG, together with the officials, haven't yet covered that question.
I might have missed that question, Chair. If there is some few seconds, maybe Honourable Nodada can repeat that question.
Okay. Honorable Notada. Are you still around? Oh, I think he left, Honorable Notada.
Oh, okay.
I think he left, yeah. It's fine. I see Honorable Keith is back, is raising his hand. Unfortunately, we're done with the questions.
I'm here, Chair.
We'll find. There is a question. Is, has it been responded to?
No, Chair. The question was around the education backlog.
Education
I mentioned
zero.
Yeah. So it was around being zero. Chair. So the day zero was indicated to be March. But I was querying something around it.
Okay. All right.
It was around day zero.
Yeah, there's an issue about backlog, certification of backlog at TVET colleges. It's a matter that we have insisted with. So in our discussion, the department and CETA, we have been talking about day zero. Day zero is the day when we're not going
for
to
the
behave.
Yeah,
we're not going to be having any backlogs any longer. So I think no data was talking about that.
Oh, okay, that's fine, Chair. I think that's also one of the things that we've been working on with the TVET branch, CETA, and our examination section. I think what we can do is just to give a status report to the committee. I'll try and push with the DDGs responsible for that, so that we give a response to that, in terms of the progress that we've made and the kind of work that we've been doing. We can send that through within the next few days or so.
All right, no, that's fine. I think unfortunately, Fighter Gates, we will not be able to take questions. My apology for that. You know, we do acknowledge that ESCOM is messing us up. Load shedding is really impacting negatively on our work as members of parliament, because we are using virtual platforms, we are using the computers, we are using connectivity and so forth. It's really wreaking havoc. But I hope that some of the questions that we are having, we will find a way of raising those questions. I think we've come to the end of the meeting. I must say that thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Dr. Oh, DG, you are back.
I've been here.
All right. No, it's fine. I gave you an opportunity to do a summary of if there's anything else that was not covered by the DDGs, but it looks like they covered almost everything. Okay.
I know. Yeah, Miss. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think maybe let's take this opportunity to thank all of you. DG, together with your team, the minister in absentia and the DM, the administrator. Thank you for heeding to our advice. You know, when you are confronted with a barrage of falsehoods, your only weapon is the truth. Your only weapon is the facts. And you shouldn't be emotional when you deal with the facts. Some of us know that we've dealt with these issues, as I said, and there's nothing into these things, but put the facts, and I'm happy that you have taken that to heart. The issue of the overlap of the academic year and the discussions that are taking place, I don't think DM, can you please just mute your mic? And Honorable Mananiso, I think it's Honorable Mananiso. Just switch off your mic.
my mic has been mute. I can mute. I'll mute it again, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I think it's Honorable Mananiso. Your mic is on. Are you able to, or administrator, can you switch off the mic of Honorable Mananiso? So I was saying that the issue about the academic year is not only about the finances. It's also about the impact also on the students. If you can check, there are quite a number of universities that have not really had substantive teaching and learning taking place, particularly Fort Hare. I don't know whether Fort Hare has had any meaningful academic activity ever since the beginning of this academic year, because ever since we started, there's been student protest, the university was shut off, and I think it never reopened. We have had an administrator there who was very, very, very arrogant and intransigent, and not able to listen to the views of both, almost all the leaders, the portfolio committee, everybody. And as a result, that university has been closed. There's never been academic activity. We are now in July. It doesn't look like students will be going back. I'm not sure whether they have started to go back there. So it's really one of the universities that... And then you have got... discussion to the academic year. And UKZN, there's been some disruption there. And you've got other universities where basically this academic year will consist of about maybe a month, 2 months, 3 months. So it's really a question which is something that the full extent of the impact of COVID-19 will still have to be assessed, you know, at the end of this year. But I hope that those discussions are taking place both in the ministerial task team and at other levels of the department. But as far as we are concerned, I think we're happy with the presentations, both of the department and of NSFAS. It's quite clear that there will have to be a revision of the APPs. And once that happens, I think we'll have to create a platform where that presentation is going to be made. It may not be within the time frames, because by Friday we must adopt the report, take it to be published in the ATC, and then later this month or early next month, we will have to have mini plenaries to debate these adjustments to the departmental budget.
I'm not by counseling.
CFO, mute.
Sorry, Chair.
I think, please, honorable members and everybody, take care of yourself. This COVID-19 is a merciless killer. It's a very dangerous virus. It wants all of us to look after ourselves, do as we are told to do, sanitize, wash hands regularly, wear our masks when we're in public, social distancing, avoid traveling, avoid going to public places, because we are really losing a lot of people. And it's beginning to hit home. In our families, I'm sure it's one person, it should be one person that we know has been affected by this virus. So it initially it was a distant past. It was like it's happening to people very far away. But now it's coming, it's hitting here at home, and I think we must all be careful. Take the necessary precautions and all of that. Otherwise, thank you very much, honorable members. It has been a very good meeting. We're meeting again, I think, tomorrow, Anelani. We're meeting tomorrow. And then, tomorrow. And then we're meeting again on Friday to adopt the report. Oh, welcome back, Honorable Itzi. We missed you. We know there's a... Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. We've come to the end of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much,
Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. You never gave us a...